to buckle up for safety. Everybody buckle up.
Everybody should buckle up. It's the law. That's our official legal statement for the dollar bin. Buckle up. It's the law. Yeah, I just realized that the stuff they're saying, nobody else can hear.
Oh.
Oh, okay. So, hey guys. This is Heather, Sean, Adam, and Jay Chris. We're driving back from SPX. We're on 85. We didn't get lost. We feel accomplished. We just got back into North Carolina.
We haven't gotten lost yet.
No, we thought we did, but we didn't. Jay Chris is chewing, and once he finishes chewing, we'll hand off what he's eating. Pretzel cheese combos.
Do I need to take a picture of Jay Chris?
And once he stops chewing,
done.
We'll pass a mic up front so that Adam and Jay Chris can contribute instead of you just hearing us reacting to what they're saying. Now you should take that picture, which will accompany the podcast because Jay Chris has put like 4 or 5 combos in his mouth.
It is beautiful.
As and pretzel teeth.
Like, no. Like, you could see bows.
Nice. Okay. So, Sean, what did you think of SPX?
It was awesome. I spent all my money and then some. And then it was all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get anything cool for Heroes?
I did. I bought a lot of stuff for the store. Or at least I hope it turns out to be a lot of stuff. In my head, it's a lot of stuff.
So that our listeners near Charlotte can pick up a piece of SPX for their very own at Heroes.
Yeah,
Coming soon.
Let's see. What did I buy? I bought some Monster Towns from Pronos something. Nahoyatus? That might be wrong.
We don't know how to speak all of the words.
And I had him pronounce it, and then I immediately forgot. Yeah, Pranus. But how do you spell his last name? Pronounce his last name. It's Nahoyatus or something, isn't it?
I could be wrong. Jay Chris is even out on that one.
He's a really cool guy. I bought Monster Town, which it's a collection of 3 minis that you kind of house in this little monster mouth. And I bought his Zack and Sarah book, too. I got some Traffic and Weather by Rob Allman. I got a couple Jay Chris minis. I got a collection of 4 stories. I can't remember what it was. I got some J.P. Kubert. I don't know how to pronounce people's names. I'm sorry, guys. It was really cool. I think it's called Adrift. I should have, looked the stuff up before I ramble on about the stuff that I don't really remember what I bought. Okay. I bought cool stuff for the store.
Should I say that since it didn't pick up? We're going to do a stuff we bought show later. And I think we're going to try and get Jay Chris to participate in that as well, because he bought stuff too.
Check the Heroes blog, www.heroesonline.com/blog, and I will post what I bought for the store. So if you're in the Charlotte area and want to pick up some mini comics, I try to pick up new things from people, like the new paper cutter and kind of things. And Jim Rugg's in that paper cutter, so is Nate Beatty. It looked really cool.
Nice. So that people in the Charlotte area can have their own taste of SPX at home.
Yeah. We did some interviews. I got to interview Roger Langridge and basically ask him why he's so awesome, but it 4 different ways.
Roger Langridge is like one of the easiest interviews because you can just mutter at him and he can take your mutters and turn it into just interview brilliance. Hey everybody, this is Heather and Sean from the Dollar Bin. We're coming to you from SPX, where we are about to interview Roger Langridge, who some of you may know from Fred the Clown, Muppets, and most recently Thor. So I'm going to let Sean kick us off with the first question, and we're going to start.
Okay. I kind of wanted to know about some of your influences. I know with Fred the Clown, there's a lot of strips, and with Mugwump, and with Muppets, there's a lot of vaudeville kind of humor. So did you read a lot of strips growing up, or watch?
Yeah, I've always read strips. I mean, that great big book, the Smithsonian Book of Newspaper Comics, that pretty much changed my life. That was a fantastic book.
Yeah.
As for the vaudeville influence, obviously I haven't actually seen vaudeville, but the Muppet Show, I think, was a big influence in that respect. It got me interested in that kind of world. So it's sort of come full circle now that I'm actually writing the Muppets. But a lot of the comedians that I really like were from that world, like Buster Keaton, the Marx Brothers, W.C. Fields. They all went through vaudeville. The British side of the Atlantic, the Goons, went through music hall. They all sort of had their start there. So all of my influences kind of went through there. Even the Pythons did review, which wasn't that far off old vaudeville.
That's true, yeah.
You even did some early work with W.C. Fields, didn't you, as a... I can't remember if we discussed doing, like, comic strips or some mini-comics with W.C. Fields.
Well, there was a character based on W.C. Fields in a pitch for a project that Scott Gray, the writer of Fin Fang Four, and I were trying to get off the ground with a European publisher. It never came to anything, but it was the W.C. Fields caricature from that strip that got me work on the Doctor Who strip later on, so... Somebody saw the caricature and thought, oh, he can do caricatures. I can't. I can just do W.C. Fields. But I got away with it.
I recently read your Frankenstein meets Shirley Temple.
Okay.
I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, like, the humor and the wit. What was kind of your inspiration for Shirley Temple? It was almost like a Betty Davis, like, whatever happened to Baby Jane kind of a
Yeah.
Feel?
Well, the way it started was I was asked to do something in... A1 it was, this anthology, and I was told I had 2 pages, so it had to be characters that people were already familiar with. I didn't have time to introduce new characters, you know, and so I came up with the idea of Frankenstein meets Shirley Temple, and I went with Frankenstein knowing that was wrong, that it's actually Frankenstein's monster, because it's just easier that way.
Exactly,
Yeah, and I thought it would be interesting to flip the two characters on their heads, you know, as far as personalities. The sweet one is the monster, and the cynical, sort of nasty one is the little girl.
Yeah.
Just to keep it interesting, really.
Are you going to do any more, like is there going to be a Fred the Clown Volume 2 where you do more kind of recent strips like Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah, as soon as I invent the 56-hour day, I'm going to get onto that. I would love to do more of that stuff, but I'd love to do more of my own stuff, but I just don't have time. Right now. Yes.
So has a lot of your mainstream, like, boom and Marvel work been monopolizing a lot of your time now?
Replace a lot in that sentence with all, and you'd be about right, yes.
Yeah.
my children wonder who that strange man in the attic is, you know. It's been a weird couple of years, you know. I'm in a place I didn't expect to be, but there you go.
Are you happy with that place, though?
As long as it's not forever. Yeah, I can't handle the pace, you know.
I understand.
I'm just going to collapse. But, like I was saying before the interview started, when... people were commenting on how busy I was. It's a nice problem to have. You know, a lot of people don't have that problem right now. So who would love to have that problem?
How's it been working on a superhero book after doing stuff like The Muppets and your own independent stuff, as far as coming with a character that's already really, really established and people know a lot about?
Well, I'm in a fortunate position in that I don't have to worry about any of the continuity stuff because they're basically hiving it off in its own little world. So I don't have to catch up with 20 years worth of comics I haven't read, which is great. It's a really interesting challenge. It's using different parts of my brain than I normally use when I'm doing Muppets, even The Muppet Show, even though it's a regular monthly book. It's the kind of regular monthly book where you can put anything into it and it'll kind of work. Whereas Thor has to be a lot more carefully structured. You have to sort of pitch it at a more realistic level. Not realistic necessarily, because it's about a guy who wears tights flying around with a hammer, but... I feel like I'm learning a lot. I feel like I'm sort of getting to grips with longer narratives, which is something that's always been a weakness of mine. And I'm hugely fortunate with the artist, Chris Samnee, who's fantastic and is making me look really good. So I can afford to make mistakes, and people will still buy it because they like his work.
It's been something that I've been enjoying reading. I don't read a lot of superhero stuff, but when I saw that you were on the new Thor, I decided to pick it up and have really enjoyed your writing and enjoyed the art.
Thank you very much. That's what we're here for.
With Muppet Show and a lot of your independent stuff, you write and draw everything. How is the transition to becoming, like, even with Muppet Show, you're writing now?
I'm writing and drawing some of them, but I've had a couple of fill-ins, yeah. It's a position I honestly never expected to be, because I always thought of myself as an artist who wrote stuff for him to draw rather than a writer who drew his own comics, you know?
Yeah.
I never thought of myself as a writer at all. I sort of got into writing through the back door somehow without, you know, I woke up one morning and I found out I was a writer, which is, you know, I think that's probably how most of life happens to most people anyway. It's just, that was my particular example of it. But, I am enjoying it. I didn't think I would enjoy writing for other people, and I find that I really, really am. I always get something back that I wasn't expecting, and it's always an improvement over what I had in my head. And, I'd like to do more of it. I'd like to keep doing it.
Have you had to really change your writing style?
I don't do 12-panel pages so often.
Yeah.
Because I don't like mail bombs. I think they're nasty. But, apart from just trying not to be horrible to them and give them stuff that's just not nice to draw. Not really.
Are you out of questions already?
Maybe. I don't know.
Has Sean gone into fangirl mode?
Yeah. I'm just listening. Right now, I'm just listening. Like, I have no questions. Like, please tell me more. I mean...
Is this your first SPX?
No. It's the first one in a few years, though.
Okay.
I've been away for... The last one I came to was in 2007, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. The very first one I went to was in 2000, so I've been coming for a while. Yeah.
I know that we have some artists that listen to our podcast, and one of the things they like to hear about is the creative process that goes on when you're working. I know one of the things that some of them have talked about is, like, the playlists they listen to. Do you listen to music while you work? Or
Not while I'm writing, because I find that if there's any other sort of human voice going on, apart from the ones in my head, you know, I really can't do anything. I stare at the piece of paper and or the screen or whatever I'm doing. And nothing happens. So, yeah, even music I find quite distracting if it's got vocals in it. I can listen to instrumental stuff. There's a couple of Doctor Who soundtrack albums that I quite like listening to. But, yeah, generally I work in silence with earplugs in because I've got kids. So, yeah, it's just easier to put earplugs in. When I'm drawing, I listen to a lot of comedy. I still listen to The Goon Show quite a bit. Stand-up stuff. There's a lot of Radio 4 comedy. Radio 4, BBC Radio 4, they have a lot of comedy programs. I listen to a lot of those. And a bit of music. Yeah, not a whole lot of music these days. I'm sort of out of the loop on music. I don't really keep up with anything. So it tends to be my old punk records. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you're working on your Muppet Show stuff, do you find yourself watching the old Muppet Show and some of the Muppet movies?
To be honest, I've deliberately tried to avoid them unless I've got something specific to research. I've got this theory that my memories of the Muppet Show are probably quite a lot funnier than the actual shows, certainly from the bits that I've seen when I've been researching a particular sketch or something. So what I'm trying to live up to is my memory of the shows rather than the shows themselves. And then if I fall short of that mark, it'll still at least be quite funny instead of trying to write as well as the shows and failing, in which case it'd be a horrible disaster.
I definitely feel you capture the feel of my memories of The Muppet Show, and I don't think I've gone back and watched any of them since I've been reading the comics.
Right.
So I think you're definitely capturing that... Like you're saying, the more the feel and the memory of it versus the actuality of going back and watching something 20 years later.
Well, thank you very much. It's a mission accomplished.
I might have a question. I don't know. a lot of your work, you do a lot of, like, you know, rhyming and poetry and stuff. Do you read a lot of poetry or?
Nope.
Okay.
I read a lot of doggerel. I like Monty Python poetry and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
I read funny stuff.
Yeah.
It's partly because when I was doing Fred the Clown, I was trying to find ways to incorporate words without using speech balloons, because I had this theory that speech balloons were what were turning off people who weren't into comics from reading them. You had to trick them into reading a comic by disguising it as something that wasn't a comic, and then after they read it, they go, oh, that was a comic, wasn't it? So I had this... It's kind of convoluted theory, and I was trying to avoid using speech balloons for about 5 years, and I started doing a lot of rhyming stuff then. I found it was fun, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got really good sense of time and
I think most decent cartoonists have a pretty good sense of rhythm.
That's true.
Just because the stories would fall apart if they didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that's connected. I'm not sure.
Maybe so.
Anything you got coming up in the future you can mention?
More of the same, really.
More of the same.
I don't think I've got anything that I'd done a while ago that's going to come out or surprise anybody. No, I think it's just Thor and the Muppets for the foreseeable future.
Thank you for your time, Roger.
Thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure. To get an interview for a long time. And, of course, we picked, like, the smallest, loudest room to do it in, finally. But, yeah, definitely thank you for all your work and your time and everything.
You're most welcome. I'll just throw out my website, shall I?
Absolutely.
www.hotelfred.com. Hotelfred.com. Remember the name, the brand of quality. Hotelfred.com. Say it in your dreams. Hotelfred.com. Hotelfred.com. Hotelfred.com.
Yeah, I asked him about his influences and realized that I asked him the same, like, question 4 times, but just about different influences.
But that's okay, because he answered it and gave, you know, additional nuggets of information each time. So it went well. We also interviewed Pat Lewis of
Cragmore and the Claws Come Out.
Claws Come Out. And then Ed Piskor. Did I say that right?
Yeah. However I said it that one time, he tried to kick me.
Sean said it wrong and he kicked her.
I said Ed Piskor. And I think he tried to kick me.
Yeah, and he won a little place in my heart for that. This is Heather at SPX with Ed Piskor, who if you could see this, he almost just kicked Sean for saying his name wrong, so I like him already.
Hi there.
Sad, tell us what kind of stuff that you do.
What kind of stuff that I do?
Yeah. That's I'm just going to give you a broad, general question.
How about in terms of comic books?
Sure.
Okay. Well, for a while, I was working on American Splendor with Harvey Pekar. And we did a couple independent graphic novels that weren't really associated with American Splendor. We did this one called Macedonia, and it was a biographical tale of his friend who she went to University of California at Berkeley. And the book sort of was a sleeper because it was about the geopolitical destabilization of the Balkan region. So you can imagine that it wouldn't have like the biggest audience or whatever. And then we did a book called The Beats, about the Beatnik generation. And I drew the first half of that book with him, you know, handling the stories about like Jack Kerouac, Ginsberg, and William S. Burroughs. And I also self-published a comic called WYSIWYG about the history of like the hacker culture, high tech culture, stuff like that.
So are you into kind of high tech stuff, computers? Are you a hacker?
Nah, but I like to, I just like to read about that stuff for pleasure. And it got to the point when I was working on the Macedonia project with Pekar, I kind of ran out of every sort of DVD audio commentary that, like, this started to bore me in a big way. And then every piece of music I had started to bore me. And I was looking for, like, podcasts really started getting popular around that time. And I found this archive for this radio show called Off the Hook, which is about hacker culture. And it's hosted by this guy who publishes a magazine called 2600, which is like the big time hacker magazine. And there's an archive of like from the beginning of the show, which starts like in like 1986. So I listened to the entire archive while I was working on this book with Pekar, and just felt really inspired by the stories that developed like on the radio show. And that's pretty much where my interest comes in to play in terms of the comic.
So what are the hackers in your comic doing?
The story is about this kid named Kevin, and he is a composite character of a lot of the most famous American hackers who were in the news over the past 20 years. So there was this guy named Kevin Mitnick, this other hacker named Kevin Polson, and a couple other dudes named, their nom de plume was, there's a kid named Fiber Optic and a guy named Bernie S., and I took all of their stories and crammed them into this one character because just from all of the reading that I was doing over time, I felt like their psychological traits between each of these individuals were similar enough that they could kind of be the same person. So the idea was to cram all of their experience into one character and like see what would happen if somebody led that interesting of a life.
Do you have to have a lot of knowledge about computers to read what you're...
No, the idea when I was creating the story was to sort of make something that would be appealing to people who were within the hacker culture, something that they could sort of be proud of and doesn't misrepresent what they sort of endorse. And what I mean by that is, you know, in pop culture now, it seems like the term hacker means like criminal or trespasser or something like that, somebody who's trying to steal your money or whatever. And it really just means like it's a curious individual who tinkers on stuff long enough to maybe sometimes break it. And I wanted to make something they could be proud of. I also work within the comic industry, and not all, you know, not everybody who's interested in comics might know techno jargon and stuff like that. So I wanted it to be accessible to people who aren't a part of hacker culture, high-tech culture, or whatever. That's sort of the impetus for the production of the book.
So do you really try to be accurate in your storytelling as far as hackerisms and things like that?
Yeah, and you know what? In fact, I received corroboration. Like in the third volume is about the hacker being a fugitive, which was, it's a trope of popular hacker lore, because Kevin Mitnick and Kevin Polson were both hackers on the run, and they basically got caught when they decided to get caught. They were on the run for years, and as you can imagine, it gets lonely not being able to speak to friends or family and have to answer to weird different names, and they basically just gave up and allowed themselves to be caught. In the third volume, based on all the reading and research that I did, you could glean like little chunks of information from a bunch of different places to figure out how these guys were able to stay on the run. So you would get a snippet of information from this source, a snippet of information from this source that's different from the other info, and I was able to sort of piece together an accurate way how to sort of create a false identity. So I decided to present it in a step-by-step fashion, just in case you need to, you know, create a false identity or whatever. And I received corroboration from specific individuals who may have used such info, and it is factually accurate.
Wow, so kind of a how-to inside a comic.
You got to love the freedom of speech.
How did you get involved in the comics thing in the beginning?
Just comics in general?
Yeah.
Something I've always been interested in. As a kid, you know, anything that costs money was like an impossibility in my household. Like, which is kind of like, I'm glad about it, and to a certain extent, because, you know, I wanted to play the clarinet, and my dad was like, you know, we can't afford this instrument, and I wanted to play football. So I wasn't like a band dork or a jock, but pencils and paper were always available. So, you know, just drew all the time, and same old story, basically. Just drew all the time and started to really get into comics. I lived in a really bad area as a kid, and, like, gang culture was, like, a big deal. Where I lived, the Crips street gang was the big one in town, and I was just a scared little dude that I used to get beat up a lot and would just hang out. I'm not looking for pity. I'm just explaining why I stayed in the house initially all day, basically every day, and taught myself to draw and whatever.
What made you kind of join the self-made comics SPX world of self-publishing and all that?
I'm also interested in punk rock and the do-it-yourself sort of ethic. So that's just a natural extension of that. When I was a kid, I made Tijuana Bibles whenever I learned about those. And for people who might not know what a Tijuana Bible is, back in like the 20s, 30s, they would be these little 8-page comics that are basically like a folded over piece of 8.5 by 11 typing paper. It would be like an 8-page comic. You would staple it down the middle, trim the top. And the popular thing to do was to use pop culture icons and characters and create like sexual, like perverted stories with them, and they would be sold. Like, to be honest, I don't know how they were distributed, but I used to make just like weird porno comics with like Bart Simpson and Miss Krabappel and sell them on a University of Pitt campus to college kids. And just from that, because they certainly got like a kick out of it, and it just kept me interested in print. Like, just the idea, it was a perverted message when I was like in middle school. But the idea of conveying information and seeing people's reactions to the work that I was doing was very interesting, and just kept doing it.
So you were in middle school on a college campus.
Yeah, it wasn't too far from my house. And you know what's weird? When I was in middle school, I probably looked like I was 5. Like I'm just now starting to look my age. But even when I first started doing SPX, I was like 21, and everybody was like, you know, are you even, you know, old enough to drive?
Did your parents sign off on your slip to be here?
Yeah, right.
What are you currently working on now? What's coming out from you?
I've been able to piece together an income in all sorts of weird ways. And, like, the big project I've been working on for, like, the past year, I've been designing characters for an Adult Swim cartoon that is going to be coming out. Like, it's going to debut in November. It's about pro wrestling. And it's with the guys who did Metalocalypse, if you ever heard of
like
that show.
Brennan Small and
The other dude.
The other one.
Yeah,
yeah, whose name I can't remember.
Tommy Blacha or something, like that. But, like, I'm not really supposed to, like, talk too much about it because you never know about these sort of things, man. Like, at the last minute, could just never see the light of day. But I already got paid, so they could sue me for all my money. But I'm just saying, that's what I was working on. So now I have cash in the pocket so that I can finish up the WYSIWYG story and sort of not have to worry about where I'm going to, you know, find money to keep a roof over my head or whatever else.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about your creative process? We've been talking to different people this weekend about whether or not they like to work, like, shut up in complete silence, if they're listening to stuff while they're working.
I'm a big-time Howard Stern listener. I meet a lot of people who, they're able to have regular jobs and work on comics with every spare moment. So even for, like, a half hour before they leave for work, and maybe do a little bit, like, on break, like, while they're at their job, like, maybe on lunch or something, and then they could, you know, do a bigger chunk of work when they get home, and I'm certainly not like that. Like, I need a huge chunk of time to sit down and just veg out and work on a page, and I can't really be disturbed or anything like that. The reason I listen to Howard Stern most days is simply because it's sort of, you know, it's funny material, and it's, like, a 6-hour-long program, so I can reliably sit in a chair for at least 6 hours without even feeling the least bit like it's like a daunting experience. So in terms of just like being able to sit in a chair and do that, like that, like that's sort of how I roll. When I produce the comics and whatever, I tend to almost draw the comic 3 times before it's the final page is seen. I don't write a traditional script like describing things. I basically draw it in a notebook and then create like a bigger rough and ultimately pencil the thing and then ink it. The end result.
You're gonna thumbnail it out, I guess.
Yeah, the end result, unfortunately, is that the work is a bit stiff, which is something that I'm trying to sort of work on. I just have to sort of get out of that routine, but I just have like zero confidence in the final product that I feel like I have to do all these like checks and balances before the final thing is, you know, sees the light of day.
So have you gotten away from the table this weekend at SPX and picked up anything?
Oh yeah, I didn't pick too much stuff up. Like this weekend for me, it was mostly about just hanging out with my friends who I only get to see for a few times a year. Sometimes some of them just here at SPX once a year. When I went to Heroes Con, I had probably the best time I've ever had at a convention since I was a little kid, and that was largely due to just not chaining myself to the table and walking around and hanging out with people and sort of just organically having fun with it. Like sometimes, like you guys might even, you know, see elements of this. There are some people who are just like very forcefully, like it seems like they're networking or something, and that's a huge turnoff. But I sort of, the plan for this weekend was to come hang out and just sort of let the weekend make itself.
You have a website, Ed?
Yeah, you know what I'm doing right now? I'm serializing pages from WYSIWYG from the beginning, and the entire story will eventually be online.
Okay.
That's at WYSIWYGcomics.com. And new pages come out Wednesdays and Sundays, I believe.
Is that Wizzy with a Y?
WIZZYWIG, comics.com, COMICS, not with an X. I'm not cute like that.
That's I asked Pat Lewis the same question earlier because he has Lunch Break Comics, and
right,
I was like,
right,
he's
yeah.
like, no, no, it's just CS.
No, I like people who use real words. Well, I'm a big fan of that.
Like WYSIWYG, it's an acronym, WYSYWG. And it, what it stands for is what you see is what you get. That's a computer term. It like for instance, the Windows operating system would be a WYSIWYG operating system because like the, you know, what you see is what you get. And initially when I was doing mini comic versions of it, it was the WYSIWYG technical pamphlet, kind of like Acme Novelty Library. And everybody was at, like, I would only take it to comic shows, and like 90% of the people were like, what is this WY? Like, and WYSIWYG is still a weird title because, like, you know, I phonetically like spell it out or whatever. But interestingly enough, like, nobody really bugs me about it. And it's like, what is that?
So. Well, it was kind of catchy, but I like knowing that there's a reason behind it.
Yeah, it's not just like some cute, like, there are some titles of stuff I've seen in here that just seems kind of retarded. But, and I hope, mine probably seems retarded, but there is kind of like a method to the madness. I suppose there is for them too. I shouldn't be so presumptuous as to assume that they're just a bunch of geeks or whatever.
Are you going to be at any other conventions coming up?
No, you know what, I spent like 2 months out of the summer traveling, going to shows and stuff, yeah. And sort of burn out, just sort of excited to get back home and just sit at the table for a couple months, sort of uninterrupted, finish up the WYSIWYG story.
Will we hopefully see you at Heroes Con?
Yeah, man, that's a ways away. Right?
Yeah.
That's like summertime.
Yeah,
June. Yeah, cool, man. I'll hibernate for the winter and then come catch some rays down in Charlotte.
Sweet.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ed.
Hey, thanks
it's good,
a lot.
Good
thanks
for officially meeting you and everything this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, I appreciate
see you,
that.
I've seen you the last few years and actually
for sure.
Talk is good.
Thanks. Shake hands.
Yeah,
awesome.
Man.
Thank you.
He was a great interview, very conversational. We also interviewed two guys that do a rather funny
Full Sanction.
Full Sanction, do a funny little mini comic series. Not anything complex on the art, but pretty complex on their insult game. So we'll be, I guess, you'll get to hear that interview, and we'll probably be talking about that as something that we picked up while we were there.
So earlier, this is Adam. So earlier I was walking around, and Adam Casey came and found me. And told me that I had to come down to the end of this aisle here and talk to these guys for an interview because they would be funny. And tell good stories. So I decided to come down here, and I'm going to see what we end up getting out of this and see how full of shit Adam Casey was or not. I you know, I bought some books from these guys, and I don't actually want to say who they are, because if I do that, then, you know, you'll know who they are. But do you guys want to say who you are?
I don't know what to say.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Joe Machovey, and I'm gesticulating, but you can't see me. And this is...
I'm Rusty Rowley.
I do a comic called Full Sanction. That's it. That's all we do.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We've worked hard at this.
Yeah.
It's very hard. You know, stapling and folding, it takes years off your hands.
How did this Full Sanction thing come together?
This isn't funny, though. This is serious.
It is.
This is watch. So, second year of the Small Press Expo. Year two, but it was only a one-day event then. And we really were inspired by everybody making their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
We said, well, if anybody can make their own thing, we are anybody. We can make
our own
comic. So the next year we came back with our first comic.
Yeah, it was printed on the copy machine at my work. And we made a number of copies just to pass around to people. We didn't even charge for it. We didn't have a table or anything the first year. We just walked around, passed out copies, and people laughed at it, so we were pretty happy about that.
Our thinking was, if we bought something from somebody, we'd be like, hey, here's a copy of our comic. And we still had to pay for the stuff, though. We just gave them to them anyway. We did that for a few years, and then another friend of ours was like, you guys should just sell the comics like a regular person sells comics. We're like, okay, if you think they're worth money. So we started selling them, and now we keep making them, and now we're now.
So have you been coming here every year from the second year of SPX?
That's correct.
How come I just now heard of you?
Because no one knows who we are.
Yeah. You may be far out of the loop.
All right, so you know how, like, okay, let's say you go to a party, right? And then, like, there's that one person who's just, like a little social butterfly flittering through the room. That's not us. We're in the corner making fun of everybody else, and so, you know, we're kind of imposing. As you can imagine.
Eventually somebody comes over like, what are you guys talking about? And then when they find out, it's like, wow, that's pretty awesome.
And that's
right?
One more person we know, and that's another friend.
Yeah.
And that's what Adam Casey just did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you see how it works.
Right.
Yeah.
One day we're going to be super famous.
Yeah. It's going to take time, but you'll get there.
Well, it's already been, 13 years, so yeah. Whatever. I got nothing but time.
So I read, I don't know what the
out...
Threats? Okay, I read Threats, which I found to be completely hilarious, which, by the way, I've shown it to several people now. Laugh out loud. I'm not going to do the LOL because that's just wrong.
Well, you're not typing it, so why would you do that?
Yeah, I know. Oh.
I'm literally laughing out loud, everybody.
Yeah, LOL.
He's actually rolling on the floor laughing.
My ass just fell off.
I wish this were video. So how long did y'all sit around and come up with the threats of this guy? Because I really feel like it really is the essence of what I want to say to people sometimes, but I just can't go that mean, and you've, like, given that to me, so now I can go that mean.
We named something. You just didn't know what to call.
Yeah, it was always there. You just know.
Now you know. You can identify it.
The day that this gentleman really pissed us off.
We're going to be a little
life.
General here, because anybody can listen to this.
Yeah.
So we're just going to
pull the curtain
name names. A little closer to the vest. You know, we were at a convention, and a guy really, really annoyed us. He embarrassed us in a really inopportune time, and Rusty was so angry with him, he just walked away.
I was livid.
He just walked away, and it was fantastic, because he doesn't really get angry. And so I started, stirring the rage, and we started talking horrible trash about this guy.
Basically sitting out in the lobby of the show.
Yeah,
like,
and everything
God damn it,
we did was just like an escalation of the previous thing. And I'm guessing it was me, because I do, oh, sorry. Oh, sorry, I don't know. Is this a microphone? So I'm guessing it was me, because I do everything that's really smart. I told Rusty we should make a comic out of this. It doesn't have to be much except two guys just talking about another guy. And then we went and started coming up with the worst things possible to say about somebody. And, of course, if you think it's about a real person, you may think we're crazy or psychotic, but we're not.
Yeah. I kind of identify with it.
Yeah. Because it is maybe a little psychotic, but it appeals to the little bit of psychoticness that everybody has.
Yeah. So that's what happened. We made it, and it was it took a few hours to write. It probably took a couple days to draw. Most of it's the same artwork over and over again. I'm not lying here, folks. It's just arms and mouth moving.
Yeah, it's stick figures talking, so.
Yeah, and then within 2 weeks, we had another printed comic.
I have a two-part question. Neither part has anything to do with the other.
Nice.
The first is, were there things that did not make the cut as far as threats?
There are.
There are.
In the back of the book.
Oh, there are. Rejected threats.
What is it called?
Rejected threats.
Yeah. Kind of like the deleted
So basically you could have done those, but you were too lazy to draw more stick figures?
No, we just didn't think they were as good as the others.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. most of our books tend to be 16 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so we divided the pages in two.
Yep.
And so we just said, you know, this is how many we're going to fit in the book.
Yep.
And we have extra ones that we thought were worthwhile mentioning.
They're like bonus put-downs.
Yeah, bonus put-downs.
Now, do you guys share art duties?
Not usually, no. I tend to be the one that draws the things.
Yeah.
We come up with the ideas together, and then I tend to slave on the drawing while Rusty sleeps.
Yes. And then like Christmas morning, I come out and it's done.
Yeah, and it's like the shoemaker's dwarves or elves or whatever helped him, and he comes out and
you're like the Keebler comic maker.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that my favorite one is I want to punt him in the balls like it's 4th and 15.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
That's my least favorite one.
That is my least favorite as well, but really? I still liked it.
Which one of you came up with that one?
Me. Rusty doesn't understand football.
No, I don't.
That's sad. That's sad, Rusty.
It's okay. I'm learning.
No, you're not.
No.
What are you taking, football classes at night?
Ooh, do you go to the football 101 for like the ladies?
Yeah. That's where you get to suppose, too.
Yeah.
His pink Redskins jersey, it's nice.
Or do you watch the Lingerie Football League on MTV2?
I'm actually an executive producer on that show. Yes.
That show is terrible.
Yeah, thanks Rusty.
Yeah, you're welcome, world. That's it.
I thought you weren't going to say anything, though.
I figured I'd chime in for at least one
second. That's not really fair.
That's right. Sean chiming in, by the way, for listeners out there. Sean.
So, as far as, where'd the name Full Sanction come from?
Well, this comic started out as kind of a wish fulfillment thing. We were trying to decide what our comic should be. And every week we'd go to the comic store and we would come up with these ridiculous stories.
Like silly scenarios.
Yeah, exaggerations on reality. And a friend of ours, John, he was like, you know, you should do a comic. I wasn't there that day, unfortunately. But from what I understand, from what Rusty tells me, you guys do a comic and that's what it should be. It should be about you guys.
Like basically having the power to do whatever we need to do to fight injustice through the world.
Right. And he said you guys should have full sanction to do whatever you want. And that's where the name came from.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they don't really fight crime anymore because it's not as much fun.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, how they started out being a detective agency, but then it just ended up being a show about some guys.
It's not as much fun as other things. So there's allusions to fighting crime, nothing actually seen.
I think douchebaggery should qualify as a crime, and I think y'all are trying to fight that.
We are. We actually have a charity that we're championing to stop douchebaggery all around.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It's working.
It's an uphill battle, but
we have a map that's like all douchebag colored, and it's slowly but surely turning green.
Yeah. Do you guys show up anywhere else other than SPX? Or
home? Work.
You guys sell your stuff at home and work, too?
No, I mean, we give it away there.
Yeah?
We only sell it to the suckers here. No, we've done a handful of other shows.
Yeah, recently we did the Philadelphia Alternative Comic Con.
Okay.
We do the Richmond Zine Fest. Done that a couple years going. And especially this year, actually, we've been branching out into a lot more of the local art shows, outdoor festivals, things like that. So we're kind of spreading the love.
We don't actually do any other official comic shows, like real deal comic shows.
Yeah, whatever,
right?
So you're from around the way then?
Yeah, we are. Yes. Around the way.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Just right over yonder?
From this hood.
Yeah, we're hood rats.
Yeah.
From here.
Yeah.
Local address.
Yeah.
You don't actually buy the table here. You're just the first ones to show up and they just build around you.
We did that one year. We just showed up because we didn't take the time to do things properly. And we were like, maybe we should just show up and see if they have a spot. And they did.
Yeah.
When you come every year for like 14 years, you can get to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, shit just happens.
Like, still, nobody knows who you are, but they recognize you. And I kind of stand out in the crowd. I'm really, really short. And that's the opposite of the truth.
It's the wonder of audio.
Yeah. But so they recognize us. And so we get to do things like that. Like, we were on the wait list.
Yeah.
And then we showed up today. We showed up yesterday and we got a table, you know?
Just like
that's how we roll.
Yeah.
Deep.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take what you want. Yeah. When you want it.
Well, everything belongs to us already.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when we take it.
Yeah. You you guys have a website?
Yes.
Are you going to share it with anybody?
Yeah, of course. www.gloogle.
G-double-O. Is it actually G-double-O?
Like right. No.
G-E-E-D-O-U-B.
No, you sound it
no?
out. It's okay.
No? Yeah. G-double-O.
Our website is fullsanction.com. And if you like listening to us, and I know you do, You're going to love watching us. And we also have a number of videos on YouTube. You can just YouTube Full Sanction. Two words there, not one word.
Yes, and, space between the words.
Yeah, like websites, no space, YouTube space. And you can watch us go to North Carolina.
Cool. Well, thank you guys a lot, man. I'm gonna.
Thank you for stopping by.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I really like you. I like you as a person and
thanks.
As a man.
You haven't really met me, so that's cool.
That's how
this
good
is.
Of a,
that's why. So far,
this,
so
yeah.
Good.
I mean, this isn't really me. This is official me.
Wow.
This is
so what's unofficial. You like?
Yeah, it's terrible.
No pants?
Oh man, absolutely.
Crazy. Just
absolutely.
Walking around like a crazy person.
Yes.
That's why I married him.
Right.
Wow. Aww. Good choice. I don't know you. I just really appreciate your essence. I mean, I'm kind of unsettled, but
yeah.
I think it's just I don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. You guys kind of have, I like the setup you guys have here.
Thank we got...
kind of like the comics plus mess.
Thank you. We yeah. work hard on this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like somebody who has that, like, disheveled hair.
Uh-huh.
It takes work to make it look like this.
Yeah.
Make it be just that disheveled.
Yeah.
Well, this table says, look, we're doing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are doing stuff.
Yeah.
Let me talk about one last thing.
Yeah.
Just because I thought of it. One of the greatest things we've ever come up with are adventure portraits.
Uh-huh.
That's what, show them the paper.
Oh, yeah. So I've seen people getting these things. Okay.
All right, so this is earlier. This actually features you guys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I do remember that. That was awesome.
So the idea Rusty came up with was that we would draw people pictures of themselves on an adventure.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's riding a dinosaur. Sometimes it's punching the devil's heart out of his chest. Whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do as well. So we are doing things.
Constantly doing.
We're not just messing around here, folk. You know what? I'd like to bestow this upon you.
To me or
yeah, sure.
to
Why
me?
Yeah.
Do I get it? Do we have to split it and once cut it in half?
No, we can frame it and then put it on the wall.
It's already framed. It's already framed.
We can double frame it.
We can put it on the refrigerator.
Yeah. And people will ask us.
Yeah. So you just got an adventure portrait.
It's an awesome
Who's that
conversation
guy?
Piece.
It is.
Which of your little cousins drew that? Is, you know?
Oh, me.
Yeah.
My own little cousin, me.
Yeah.
I'm developmentally disabled, so I appreciate the criticism.
Yeah.
It just makes me want to try harder.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, thank you guys a lot for everything.
Thank
and,
you for everything.
I'm sure after I edit this, it'll actually be good.
Oh.
I look forward to that.
Thank you for that.
Thanks. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're good. I think we're getting made fun of for us being boring. So should we step it up?
No, I thought she was doing a fantastic. Both of you were doing a fantastic job. This is J. Chris Campbell talking, by the way. Thank you for joining us. We'll be kicking some more humor into the podcast now, but not really. So I just had to get that one line of coke, you know?
Now I'm ready.
Now I'm ready.
I also got to work at the booth for J. Chris and Rob Ullman, and that was pretty fun. I sold
Wasn't
some
it
stuff.
Fantastic?
I sold some stuff.
You did. I was
I
surprised.
Freaked some guys out because they were like, "Did that chick really just draw this naked lady art?" A couple of them, you know, looked up, saw me behind there, slowly put their teeny bikinis down, and backed away.
Didn't some old lady go like, "Did you draw these naked ladies?"
Yes, I did get one of those.
Excuse me, young lady, did you draw these naked women on the table? Somebody did ask you that, though.
Yeah, they did. And it was a shocked, you know, I can't believe that a woman would draw this.
I
should have told him that Rob was my stand-in because a woman drawing naked ladies intimidates, you know, my customer base. So I hired Rob from a catalog.
Catalog Rob.
The one published comic that I have, the page, I drew boobies.
Oh.
I drew boobies. Take that.
Wait, is that in the dollar bin?
It's in the dollar bin, the second anthology.
Is that the one where it was talking about a page that was something that was a nude photograph?
You don't let your boyfriend take naked pictures of you.
That's right. Were there boobies in that one?
Yeah, I drew boobies. Two circles.
Oh, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. They're abstracted.
Abstracted boobies.
You know.
I thought they were eyeballs.
Yeah, I was going to say, they could also be eyeballs.
I thought the headline was looking at me.
Yeah, that's awesome. They could be eyeballs, too. Think about the different layers of meaning.
Just think about that.
Like, it's a picture. It's like the lens, the eye of the lens taking a picture of eyes. It's very deep and complex.
So did you notice anything from watching a table get any insights other than being looked at strange for drawing naked ladies?
I think it's funny sometimes when people are like looking at this stuff and then they're like, they kind of like it, but they can't commit. But then they look at you and they're like, they feel bad that they're not like purchasing something that they picked up and touched. And
yeah, there is kind of like a what the hell is this kind of thing that happens when some people are like, ooh, what is this? And they kind of look at it and... And that's your opportunity to kind of step in and say blah, 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 or like really.
I did have a total hipster, like skinny jeans, a tied cardigan, full hipster regalia, pick up teeny bikini while I was standing there and give an audible gasp that was a huh when he flipped it open. And, you know, because I think whichever one he flipped open has the naked lady pretty much on the first page. And, yeah, he was, like, visibly, like, shocked. And I responded with, it's called Teeny Bikini. What did you expect? And he was like, yeah, good point there. So.
He probably didn't read it.
But there's a lady in a teeny bikini on the cover of all of those.
You know what he was doing. He wasn't shocked. He was putting on a game play.
Well, he was with, like, one of the hipster girlfriends that kind of look a little androgynous. So, you know, maybe he felt bad about looking at curvy boobs in front of her.
The one thing that's weird at Rob's table, a lot of girls come up and pick those books up and look at them. Know full well what they are. Aren't like lesbians, can we say that? And are looking at these things. And then, like, they're there with their boyfriends. And I saw some that they were there with their boyfriends. The boyfriend was obviously a fan of Rob's stuff. And they wouldn't talk to Rob. But the girl would look at the stuff and show them to her husband and, like, talk to Rob. Like, it was strange, strange stuff.
My wife knows that I'm a fan of Rob's stuff, and I don't hide that.
No.
I'm a fan of Rob's stuff, and I don't hide that.
Exactly. Yeah, I got her that last year. I got her the banana hammock.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love my banana hammock.
I also own banana hammock. And am an open fan of Rob's work.
He draws pretty ladies. I like pretty ladies.
He was supposed to have a new comic for the show that he's working on that has the same... He's going to kill me for not remembering her name. Superhero lady from... That's Just Super mini comic that he did.
Oh, yeah. He did say he was working on volume 2.
And he has, like, the majority of it, like, ready to go. Like, he's got it all penciled out and written. Like, I saw the pages. Yeah. He had them with him. But, yeah, he probably had a little bit too much more work, and he didn't want to push it, which I'm glad he didn't. Yeah. So he'll have that for sure.
Rob makes nudity adorable.
I wonder, like, how does... I mean, you're there all day with him, and we don't have Rob with us, but how does Rob do in the hipster indie SPX market compared to, like, the superhero con kind of market?
It's weird because those people are... The majority of them don't... I don't see, like, hipsters looking at it. It's like he pulls all the manly man guys over there, like, looking at ladies kind of thing. There are some kind of hipsters looking, but honestly, the ratio of, like, women to men, it would kind of blow your mind that are come and look at it, you know?
And he had a couple of commissions this weekend, and I know at least one of those was superhero because it was Lady Deadpool.
I saw, like, most of his commissions that he did were superhero-related. I think three of them that I saw were superhero-related, and then there was one hockey jersey girl. We were talking about you watching a table and how it was, like, for somebody who, you know, which you did before, you've done before, but you did it for a longer period of time this time, right?
Yeah, and then I ended up also watching the Keith, watching his table too, and I actually made a sell for him as well.
Wow.
So I had a back pocket of money for Jay Chris, a back pocket of money for Keith, and then Rob has...
So being Sean and Heather.
Yes, as usual.
The first SPX experience, most of your experiences in general, Heather mentioned earlier that Heroes Con's really her only con experience. To walk around that many tables and look at that much stuff, how did you guys get by with the, how did you guys get through the, turning down the sad eyes that were pointed to you?
I don't make eye contact with people.
Yeah.
I kind of blame me spending a lot of money on the, I have a really hard time saying no to people. And if I pick up something, I feel like I'm judging them and I want to give them money to not feel bad. But there's some really, really cool stuff. Like everything I saw was really awesome and I wanted to buy all of it, and I can't take the sad puppy dog.
book. I can't do it.
Yeah, I actually picked up one thing that I read last night that I'm really sad that I didn't go ahead and pick up the second volume.
Yeah. Being a little more discriminate and avoiding eye contact, Heather, how did you decide what it was that you were going to buy and what you didn't buy?
Well, I had actually gotten on SPX website and checked out their exhibitors before coming, so there were a couple people that I knew I wanted to purchase from, and the rest of it just kind of walking around and if there was something that drew my eye. One I picked up because he had a print that was of a purple and white panda that said, "Oh no!" So it like attracted me over there. It took me a minute to actually find the guy who did it because he was hidden behind like the big like card stand thing that he had, you know, the turn thing that he had all his books in. And I actually initially thought the guy next to him was the one selling it because he was so hidden behind it. So that one, I wouldn't have even had a chance to make eye contact with him. And which is odd because you think you'd want to be looking at people and be like, please buy my stuff. But
well, it's funny. There's a bunch of different breeds of people there. You got the people that have no idea how to socially interact with people, and they just kind of timidly sit behind their table and they don't really know what to do, and they're usually first timers or something. Notice you also have people that completely feel the need to jump out and grab your attention and here take a sticker. Seriously, that one guy gave me 17 stickers. I didn't even want the one, and you know, he's just like, here take a sticker. And I mean, you have those kind of guys, and you have the puppy dog eye people, of course. You also have the people that like just kind of sit back and let the product sell itself. Really, they don't really interact at all. And I guess he was kind of one of those, I'll put my product on display and hopefully it'll sell itself better than I can sell it if I disrupt or irritate these people by saying something wrong.
Well, and I think the ones that I purchased from that I had not researched beforehand, those were the ones that I bought from because I didn't feel pressure from them. I could actually look at their stuff, check it out, and make a decision without them being like, look at this is so awesome. Or the ones that like stand there and like look aloof while you're looking through their stuff, like, you're not smart enough to understand my work and you don't get it, so you should just put it back down.
Yeah.
So I think I like the guys who are more willing to let you look through and then let you make that first contact of, so you know, I like this, tell me more about it, kind of thing.
And so Sean, being you know, with the puppy dog thing and all that stuff, and you feel like every time you're picking up somebody's stuff you're judging it.
I do. I've been on the other side of that table. It's rough.
Yeah. So you didn't buy every single thing there. I mean,
no.
I'm really a master of the, hey, I'm just looking, I'm going to buy all my stuff at the end.
That's how
I get out of it.
I did that a couple times too. And at the very last day, I was actually out of money. And I told them, like, I have no money left. I'm sorry. I'll check out your website.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing.
Yeah, I'm a master of the, I'm just kind of looking around. I'm going to buy stuff later. I'm not buying anything right now. But Heather, did you have to do any interactions, or were you able to avoid all that completely?
I'm pretty good at avoiding all that. And initially, I didn't buy anything the first day.
Yeah.
SPX was a little more crowded and had a little more exhibitors than I expected. So I really initially was just walking around, checking everything out, and then bought stuff on Sunday after I had time more to absorb things. But yeah, I had a couple people that I stopped and looked at stuff, and luckily they weren't very high pressure, so I didn't feel bad about it. I tried to generally, like, even if somebody had something like that might have looked interesting on their table, if they were doing that dejected puppy dog eye thing, I would just keep walking.
I remember, like, when we got there, I was like, okay, you know, here's the system that I have. You know, I do the walk around and I don't buy anything. And like, it's kind of interesting. I guess, like, between Sean and Heather, you guys basically split my system, where Sean, like, bought everything immediately that she...
That's just how I roll. I buy things because, like, if not, I'll forget that I saw it or where I got it from or where it was, and then I'll not buy it.
That's
so I figure I might as well just go ahead and buy it now.
That's how I cut down on things. I cut down on things by going, you know, if I really want it, I'll remember to come back and look through for it. Because if I know, if I see it and I look, that looks cool, and I buy it, then I'm like, I'll do that all weekend.
Well,
and then,
I'm kind of doing research for the store.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the convention. So that's how I can justify my extravagant purchases.
Talking about selling techniques and everything for, there's a trooper. I guess tips for
selling.
Really? What is that?
There's another one coming, though.
So, yeah, J. Chris's tips for selling at conventions, I guess, would be to have everything with prices on it visible so that depending on, not only is there different ways to sell, there's different ways that people actually come and buy, just like you guys say. But one of the key things is if they have to ask about how much, I mean, you got to get to that point to ask how much it costs, you're crossing a line there. If I'm going to buy this, how much is it, you know? Whereas if they're just kind of like the price point is a deciding factor, they need to know that and have that information before they, you know, get any further. So there's a lot of people who just put their stuff out there. There's no prices anywhere or anything. Or if it's priced, it's like hidden or something or another. So I always put signs up for each item and have a price on it or a sticker or something like that. The other thing is the things that, which this is a simple thing, but the stuff that's at the front of your table actually get picked up and looked at. More so than if you have like little standees and they're at the back and you have stuff, and the stuff that are standing out kind of get glanced at more than the stuff at the front really gets looked at, because you have those people who don't do eye contact and they're looking at the front of the table, and the other people who are like walking straight up, they look at the front of the table too. The front of the
there's
something up here really going at. Yeah, no, it's like a brush.
Oh,
fire.
Somebody
threw a cigarette. Yeah.
Now we know why the Forest Service was freaking out driving down the road.
Way to cut them off, Adam.
Okay,
you,
cool.
You had already talked about...
I was talking about the placement on the table.
Yeah, you were talking about pricing everything and then placement.
Well,
and go.
Yeah, making sure it's at the front of the table. The stuff that you want to sell is at the front of the table, or the item that you're pushing for that show is right there at the front, so it gets the pickup. You could also put like your higher dollar things in the front and your cheaper stuff to the back, so that they get more eyes on them. One of the things I always make sure to have is to have like an easy entry point for somebody. Like a button is a super cool, cheap entry point for someone to kind of like your stuff. And it pulls a different type of people that not necessarily are comic fans at these kind of shows. But it also pulls, you know, at other shows, you get people who are just looking in the artist area and they like your stuff. They don't want to give you, you know, $6 for a comic, but they'll give you $1 or 75 cents for some other little kind of, you know, button or a... I've got also the Decision Decider coins now, which is just kind of a silly little thing too. They sell good. They sell, you know, all day long. You get people looking at them and people that you would not see.
I know somebody who uses theirs.
Oh, yeah?
Like, a lot.
That's cool. Well, I mean, it was just a cool little item to have there too, because, again, it's like another, like I'm saying, like an entry point for someone to kind of get into your stuff. Or like if I sold it to somebody and they're using it a lot, they're going to come by. They're going to see that coin again next time, or see something next time, or it's got an address on it. They're going to go look at my stuff, you know. So if you can get some kind of, you know, extra thing like that, or a sticker or something that you could sell, because it helps people, you know, become fans at a small price point.
You also put stuff on the freebie table, don't you?
Yeah, that's another thing that's kind of like hit or miss. But if you're doing promotional things, definitely search out the freebie table, because there's people who go through that and will look at it and go to your site later or whatever. But if you do it right, you can tie it into some kind of promotional thing. Like I have my little J. Chris blue cards that are square, and then I also have the logo on my table in that same square. So if somebody saw that on the table and they're walking around, they'll see it on my table. So it's kind of like, even if they didn't realize it, it's kind of like a double impression for them to see the logo. And or they're like, oh, that's cute, and they see it and they're like, they'll come over and see what it. So it works. But I, you know, if you don't do something like that, it's kind of like it's just a marketing, you know, another kind of promotional thing. You can't really trace the effects of it in any way. But
I
yeah,
really like your little J. Chris business cards, though.
Logo is awesome.
Thank you very much. The other thing about promotional items is if you have them on your table, like at the front, like I'm saying, like an entry area for someone, that's also like an easy out for someone, which sounds kind of bad, but it is. It's like if someone's into your stuff and there's a free business card there, they're going to take that and leave, and that's it. They're done. You know, they got their fix or whatever from you, and that's it. So a lot of times, if I do have stuff that are for free, I use that as a last ditch kind of thing. So if they've looked at my stuff, they're not going to purchase, maybe they smiled or said something, I give them a card, I hand it to them after they're done. So that's going to kind of like solidify our, you know, meeting or whatever, and that they have a something to remind them later, even if it's at the show or they go back to the room, if it's a 2-day and they're looking through stuff and they're like, I should go back and get something from this person.
There was the one girl down one of the rows and she was giving out little tiny minis. And I've done that other times before too, where I've had the mini and I'll be going through my stuff and I'll go, oh yeah, who did I get this mini from? And I have gone back and bought stuff from them.
So that's definitely, like, the handing it to people is kind of a good thing. But if you do it up front, when they're standing there, you've just given them the opportunity, here's my stuff for free, you can leave now, kind of thing. Instead of, thanks for hanging out with me, here's some more, you know, here's something of mine, check me out if you want some more information or what.
And then, like, yeah, like, on the other hand, like, the sticker guy, like, I didn't buy anything from him. He pissed me off, he annoyed me. Like, I did not buy anything from him because he was just handing, like, everybody take a sticker, take it to my book, take a sticker. You know, and it's like, it got to the point where I was like, when I'd walk down the aisle, I'd walk down the other side of the aisle and just, like, try to get, I don't want a fucking sticker. I don't think I bought
anything from the people that were really pushy with handing stuff to me.
Yeah, it's like, you know, come to my party kind of thing, please. You know, like, here's the information, please come to my party.
Well, also shoving, like, a sticker or a bookmark in someone's face like that, it kind of takes away, like, the interaction that
right.
I think most people need to, like, because with some of these minis, like, if they're more than just a couple of dollars, like, I really need a reason to justify why I'm spending $5 on something I don't know anything about, especially, like, I can get, you know, most mainstream comics for, like, under $4.
Right.
Why am I spending $5 or $6? Or some people, I looked at their stuff and I was like, I don't understand how you've priced it this way. That's a lot for an unknown purchase. Because you can't really browse some of the tables like you could a comic book store.
Right.
Because you don't have the freedom just to look at their stuff without the creator standing there looking at you like, are you going to buy it? Are you going to buy it? Do you like me? Do you like my stuff? It's a little bit of pressure that I don't necessarily like about having the artist so close on top of you.
That's another thing too that I kind of do is if someone's at their table, at your table, and they're looking at your stuff, and you could tell they're doing the walk by, and you know they're just eyeing it, and they kind of are looking, but they don't want to pick up anything. That's another opportunity to kind of you give them the freebie to see if maybe they bite. If not, they're going to be walking off anyway. But if they stop and they look and they actually pick something up, that's kind of your opportunity to step in and pitch whatever book or whatever it is that they're looking at and help them kind of like figure it out if it's not readily understandable. But usually I don't like say it's only $5 or any, I don't throw the price in on them right there. They could kind of figure that out because I've got it priced. So you don't have to do that kind of like, I'm selling this to you. It's more of like, here's the information about my product if you're interested in that sort of thing. If you like bugs that are on a, you know, a buddy story with bugs that's on some wacky adventure, and then there's some in here, you know, like that kind of thing. But so yeah, I don't usually kind of like say, here, come over here and look at my stuff, you know, kid, you're gonna love it. Robots, you like robots and pretty colors, come to my parlor. But so yeah, so that's the other thing, like with promos, that you can use those to kind of help facilitate sales and or build a fan base. Yeah, and I'm definitely a proponent of not hassling people because I don't like to get hassled when I'm looking around, so I don't hassle people. I usually am just there as information, like I have information about this stuff because I created it, you know. And that's another cool thing that people do like, as myself included, if the person who created it is standing right there and you can talk to him about it, that's awesome, because you might be an artist that you like technique or whatever. So it's that is another plus to selling things at the convention. If you're the artist that created it, then that's a big Definitely a big bonus. Unless, of course, you're Heather, who can sell stuff while no one's around. Like, here, Chris, I sold stuff. You haven't sold anything all day. Aha.
Oh, I didn't say that.
I know, you didn't.
That's how it felt.
Thankfully, that was on Saturday. It wasn't Sunday. Sunday, it would have felt like that for sure. No.
So when we got there, it was so crowded that I couldn't look at any of the tables. It was too crowded. You had to keep moving. You couldn't even stop to look at anything. And there's people blocking all the tables.
Right.
And I'm wondering how many sales actually got lost due to that.
Well, I'm pretty sure. Like, I was in the front of the room, and I was not at the end of an aisle. And I do feel like I kind of got some walk-by traffic. Like, just when you're doing that, you're looking at aisles, and then you're looking at the end of the aisle, and then you're trying to get around the corner where there's so many people, you know? So you don't get, like, those ends of them are sometimes good, depending on location, sometimes are not, so.
Yeah, I would figure where you guys were, you actually were probably getting a lot more exit looks than you were entrance looks.
Yeah, I was definitely getting more exit looks than entrance looks. That's an interesting thing about traffic flow and everything, like figuring out how that affects your sales at a show is something that's even sitting there. I saw people walking. I didn't know how to fix that. You know, it's like, what am I supposed to do? So there is a lot of times where you're at the show and you have an instance like that you didn't see happening ahead of time. You've got to adjust and figure out some other way to do it, to do your setup to accommodate that. Like, in that instance, I tried to change it up and make my stuff look more sparse so it had more impact and less noise, you know? Because usually I just pack the table full. But at SPX, every single table is usually packed full with all kinds of stuff. There's several people. Did you see the one with the oranges and the cash register? And, like, he was like a...
Oh, yeah, the two Italians.
The two Italians. That was a really cool kind of setup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, you could... I've never done, like, a theme display because it doesn't seem like it fits with me, you know? Like, make some...
Monsters and robots, isn't it?
Well, no, it's like I didn't make a robot factory with machine arms and... bolts and a wrench laying on the table.
But that sounds
like,
awesome now.
I don't know. There's something about display? Like, there's something about that like takes it to another area of, I don't know. Like, I've spent my time building this other crap instead of like making comics.
I kind of want you to build a big robot now that you're or a monster that you're like sitting in its mouth.
Like the chair.
It
can
be on the table and like in the belly. You can put your buttons that could be holding comics or eating comics. Or
I should just make a giant mouth that you're standing behind. It's like a cutout, like a lemonade stand, but you're like peeking out of the mouth of it.
You were talking about maybe trying to find ways to discover to. After you figure out the flow of traffic to change your setup a little bit, do you look at the other people around you to try to like kind of play off some of that stuff? Does that affect the way you set up your own table, like the people to your sides and things like that?
I mean, yeah, sometimes it definitely does. Like if somebody's doing one thing that's like, again, their display had basically blocked that side view. So I had to put stuff over there that either was just low dollar stuff and or things that I knew weren't going to sell as many because they were out of sight. So just I went ahead and put that stuff over there and moved other things around. So yeah, it's always really do. Usually I change it up like two or three times a day just to, because people were there all day and they may have come by one time and looked and not seen anything. And like the second time around, I've moved a couple of things around that they might catch their eye. So I'm constantly kind of messing with my table. It's kind of fun too, just to say, well, now I'm going to put this up on a box. And because you have those, you know, those few minutes when there's not someone there talking to me or handing me money, because I'm just jam-packed all day. So I have like seconds that I can change stuff. That's a joke, by the way. I wasn't being an asshole. Maybe I was, but
I think when you and Rob are set up together, you need a sign that says something like, Naked Ladies Love Robots and Monsters.
I always feel weird, like, set up next to him, because it's like, I've got all this kid, like, appealing items right next to his ladies there. It's like, you can see the kids come over with their parents, and they're walking by my table, and then the parent kind of, like, grabs them on their shoulder, like, and pulls them away kind of thing, or... You know,
kids,
sometimes
kids like naked ladies too, right?
Yeah, kids love naked ladies. I used to be a kid. I loved naked ladies. How about you?
I still love naked ladies. But I loved them when I was a kid as well.
And Rob does a pretty good job of recognizing his audience and having things so that, like, his naked ladies aren't just, like, front and center. One of his prints had, he had censored across the boobs.
When you, Chris, get time to walk around the convention floor, do you tend to spend that time looking for new stuff or kind of the stuff that you were already aware of and, like, people that you already know?
Well, the first thing I try to do, and I didn't do it this time because I ran out of time when we first got there, is I try to go around the room as quick as I can and find something new. Like, that's the goal. Like, I need to find this new thing before it's gone. Like, so I'll go around just looking for something that jumps off the table, catches my eye, if it's the style of the art or the design of the cover or the production of the book or something weird or the whatever it is. I just look for that. And then I'll go and look for the people that I know that I like, their stuff, and go back and kind of... So when you're walking around looking for the new stuff, you're kind of like plotting out, you know, where people are. But it's so hard because you get there and it's like when you hit the people you know, you want to stop and talk to them if you can get to them and chat a little bit. And so you're kind of like buying some of that stuff while you're doing it. So it's kind of hard to find that new stuff. But that's my goal of going to SPX. And when I talk to people who are walking around, they've come to my table, every one of them I ask if they got something cool, if what do they find cool, because I'm trying to pull out, cut down my footwork, like where or what, you know, check this thing out, I got this over here, or look at this thing or whatnot. So I'm constantly at the show asking people if they found anything neat or if they saw something cool.
A lot of people do that. Like,
that's
I got asked by like everybody, like, yeah. what'd you get?
Yeah, that's just one of the things, because you can't pour over the entire thing, just like every inch of it, and find it. So you've got the more people you know and everything, the more, you know, coverage, which is kind of weird too, because your tastes don't really overlap the other people, but you can still, sometimes it does, you can see, like,
yeah, or find out why they liked it and figure out if you would like it too.
Like, I always feel like I have a very specific taste, and I'm always afraid that, like, people don't have the same taste that I have. And so when people ask me, like, if there's anything cool I got, I'm usually like, well, you know, I kind of saw this that I liked, but I don't, you know. Like, I always look for, like, I don't know, I'm always, when I go to SPX, I'm always a sucker for, like, the relationship comics and stuff like that. I don't know why.
He's I like a the fun. Softie.
I like the fun comics, too, but I always like dialogue-based relationship comics.
I like the animal comics.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bought a lot of animal comics.
Did you really?
Yep.
That's cool.
I even won, like, luckily for the guy, I had already kind of set my mind that I was going to buy it as long as it wasn't sad.
That you were going to buy it if it wasn't sad?
Yeah, I don't like when dogs die.
Yeah.
But his friends were the ones at the table, and they were like, well, it's kind of a kid's book. And I'm like, why are you trying to dissuade me from buying your friend's
book?
Right,
yeah.
You know, because it's a story about his dog who the squirrels and the birds in the yard, like, become, like his villains. And they're, like, taunting him, like, ha-ha, why can't you catch us? So I thought it was cute, but I didn't need to be told, oh, it's a kid's
book.
Right,
it's a kid's book, yeah. Well, that's for me.
Half the things I buy are kids' books.
I'm about to buy gas from Kmart.
That is the weirdest thing. We are currently at a Kmart Express.
I actually got tricked. I was I took the exit to go. I was gonna go to Kangaroo, which is also cheap and whatever. But the Kmart was to the right, and the Kangaroo was to the left, and I saw the big K, and I went right.
It's okay. We'll get gas at Kmart.
Kmart sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this. It's kind of weird, but it's not my car. So.
You want to pause it?